Millions of dollars are pouring into Pennsylvania each year because of a prized natural resource. It's not natural gas or timber. It's steelhead or rainbow trout.
When you think about that fish and how far they travel to get there, and you get the opportunity to catch that fish, it's really a special thing.
I'm Carol Holzapfel. This week on the Allegheny Front, how the Great Lakes are cashing in on a fishing phenomenon. Plus, Trump has promised big changes at the Environmental Protection Agency. We talked to the man with the plan.
The EPA has overregulated the economy, not for environmental protection, but actually to inhibit investment in the economy and destroy jobs in the natural resource industries.
He's not a fan. Those and more environmental stories are coming up on the Allegheny Front. Stay with us. The Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection is under fire from the Environmental Protection Agency for what the federal agency says is a failure to enforce safe drinking water standards. David Hess is former Secretary of DEP under Governor Tom Ridge and now works on government affairs issues for environmental groups and others. He joins me now to talk about this situation. In December, the Environmental Protection Agency sent DEP a letter admonishing the state agency for not having enough resources to ensure that safe drinking water standards are enforced. And the letter said that in EPA's review, it found that there weren't enough staff to properly inspect drinking water treatment plants, and that the number of inspections has fallen over the last 5 years, and the number of drinking water violations that went unaddressed increased over the last 5 years, up to almost 8,000 violations. Now, DEP has 60 days to address these shortcomings, and this was really a warning that DEP's primacy would be taken away. What does that mean, and what would the implications be for Pennsylvania?
Well, primacy means Pennsylvania has the authority to enforce federal safe drinking water requirements as well as state requirements. And along with primacy comes not only funding help to support putting together the program, to pay staff here in Pennsylvania, to pay other expenses, but the biggest thing is about $100 million every year comes from the federal government to give out in the form of grants and loans to water systems around the state to improve their systems, put in new drinking water treatment plants, upgrade monitoring at drinking water treatment plants. So the impact could be absolutely huge if we lose primacy.
Would the federal government step in?
If it came to that, the federal government would enforce its requirements. The state would enforce its own requirements. People who run water companies would be subject to double permitting because Pennsylvania is a state law that requires these systems to be regulated. It would represent a paperwork and regulatory nightmare for the people who are regulated by that program.
And just talk a little bit about the implications of DEP's inability to properly monitor drinking water in the state.
Well, safe drinking water is only one program. The surface mining program, air quality program, clean water programs have all gotten similar letters over the past couple years, and not just one. This isn't even the first one for the safe drinking water program. Pennsylvania has been on notice from the federal government because we're not meeting minimum federal requirements because we just don't have the staff. You know, the General Assembly and the governors over the last decade or so have cut DEP's general fund monies by 40%. They've cut staff by almost 25%. They're down 800 positions from where they were in 2003 when I left. These cuts have an impact. I mean, this isn't hard to figure out for anybody. If you don't have the staff and you have X number of facilities you have to inspect, simple math will tell you, you just can't do everything.
Governor Wolf recently announced his new budget proposal. Are there any changes from last year or previous years that would suggest DEP will be better funded to deal with drinking water monitoring or any of their other duties?
Well, there's not a dime to get new staff. There's not a dime to pay other regulatory programs. Where he does increase some money, it's dependent on floating a bond issue, which the General Assembly is very cool to, and the nationally recognized Growing Greener program that funds mine reclamation and watershed restoration projects is in serious, serious jeopardy because they're taking money out of that fund to ultimately fund the state's cleanup of hazardous waste sites. It is a convoluted budget. You know, this is the same sort of gimmick and mechanism that we've seen over the last 10 years from the General Assembly and governors, and it hasn't solved the problem.
Well, what's the solution in your mind? I know DEP had suggested in some of the reporting over the last week about this that they would be raising fees.
I think there are a couple solutions to this. First, legislators and the governor have got to understand a simple fact. If you cut somebody 25%, it's going to have an impact. It's simple math. And unlike a business, you know, if DEP was a private business, they could stop making a product, they could close a facility. DEP doesn't have the option of not enforcing environmental laws to make sure we have clean water or regulating mining. Once you recognize that fact, you get down to the nitty-gritty. Part of that is adopting fees when the industry is regulated. I think it's retooling the permit process so that you get it to be more efficient. And DEP has been taking steps recently to do that, including electronic permitting. And I think the other thing we need to do is to look at regulations again to make sure we have effective and efficient regulations without overburdening the people that the department is regulating, not sacrificing environmental protection, but eliminating as much paperwork as we possibly can. So this is a joint effort between the people who are regulated, DEP, the General Assembly, and the governor that have got to take these kinds of common sense steps.
And as there is no money for additional staffing in the budget, like where would that money come from?
They seem to spend money on things like giving $60 million to movie makers to make movies in Pennsylvania. Maybe that should go somewhere else. I mean, if you look at the state budget, the priorities I have to scratch my head at sometimes because they are not core functions of state budgets and state government. Protecting the environment is, especially here in Pennsylvania, where you have a constitutional amendment that says that people have a right to clean air and pure water.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
Yeah, sure.
David Hess has been working on environmental issues for over 40 years. He's the former head of the DEP under Governor Tom Ridge and works with the government affairs group Creasy Associates in Harrisburg. Of course, the EPA provides oversight when it comes to environmental regulation in states, but there are big changes coming to the agency under the Trump administration. The Allegheny Friends' Reed Frazier was in Washington, D.C. recently at a Society of Environmental Journalists event. Myron Ebell was a speaker there. Ebell is director of the Center for Energy and Environment at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. That's a Washington think tank that promotes small government policies. And he's been a vocal critic of not just the EPA, but climate science. Until January, Ebell headed Trump's EPA transition team. Reed talked with Ebell, and for our new podcast, Trump on Earth, Reed and I discussed some clues Ebell gave about what's in store for EPA.
He said, don't look at what the transition team did or came up with, but really look at what Trump promised during the campaign. Because as we know, Trump is keen on keeping the promises that he's made. He's done this in a lot of areas, and now we're starting to see that.
Our plan was, how do you get these things done very quickly? So I will give you some insight. We didn't spend a lot of time looking at how the administration could approach Congress and ask for legislation. Because if you want to have inaction, then in recent years, on particularly on energy and environment policy, you go to Congress because they have proven that it's just everything is frozen up there. You can't move legislation. You can't get it enacted. So we didn't spend a lot of time proposing new legislation.
Well, that's what Obama was criticized for, that he didn't include Congress. He used executive orders to push environmental regulations through.
Yeah, he used executive orders and regulations through cabinet agencies to get what he wanted done. I think one of Ebell's main points that he made at the conference was that the people who voted for Trump wanted a change, and among the changes that they wanted was a shift away from the kind of environmental focus of the Obama administration. That was one of the hallmarks of Obama's last 4 years, was his climate action plan. And Trump, as we know, has said he would undo all that. And here's what Ebell said on that point.
And I think it is not unfair to characterize that policy of the Obama administration and the Democrats in Congress. It's urban eco-imperialism. Now, the people who live in rural areas and small towns and who depend upon the material economy rather than the information economy, that is, those people who dig up stuff, grow stuff, and make stuff for a living, those people have been under siege on and off for a long time. And I think, yes, it's true that previous Republican candidates, one rural America, one small town America, the turnout has gone down because people have given up. And I think Trump, as a candidate, figured that out, and he actually listened to people.
So as you just heard, this is kind of an extension of what how Trump has positioned himself to his supporters. And to boil it down to really simple terms, I think it just means that fewer environmental regulations in industries that like coal mining or
jobs in coal country and manufacturing.
More jobs, less environmental regulation.
So Trump's rhetoric resonated with people around this and also, I think, with Ebell. So how did that translate into policy? What does he think should happen at the EPA?
So I had a chance to talk to Ebell after the conference, and I asked him this question. I asked him what the philosophy was that he had going into the EPA transition team. And essentially, he says the EPA is just too big and too strong, and he'd like to cut it down. And here's what he said about that.
Starting fairly late in the campaign in May, he started giving speeches on major policy issues, and one of them was on energy and environment on May 26th. And then during the rest of the campaign, once the general election started, he gave several more. And I would say what I thought was correct was that the EPA has overregulated the economy, not for environmental protection, but actually to inhibit investment in the economy and destroy jobs in the natural resource industries.
So natural resources industries, he's talking about drilling,
pretty much anything, yeah, you know, farming, logging, but, you know, fossil fuels, certainly. I mean, that's Myron Ebell's philosophy. Basically, the EPA has fulfilled its original goals of when it was enacted in the 70s of cleaning the air and the water. And he thinks that now the EPA is basically geared towards something entirely different.
I hope that the Trump administration is serious about the things that President Trump said during the campaign about the EPA being an obstacle, more than a help, that in many cases it's not really concerned with environmental protection, it's concerned with carrying out the agenda of the environmental pressure groups and what I might call the climate industrial complex.
That was Myron Ebell, the head of Trump's EPA transition team. And to hear more of Reid Frazier's conversation with him, take a listen to our new podcast, Trump on Earth. It's a deeper dive into environmental policy under the new administration. You can hear past episodes and subscribe to new ones at trumponearth.org. That's trumponearth.org. Trump on Earth is produced in collaboration with Point Park University's Environmental Journalism Program. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsapel. Steelhead or rainbow trout aren't native to the Great Lakes, but when it comes to catching them, there's no competition.
You go to the Pacific Northwest, and if you catch a few fish, like three fish in a week, it's been a phenomenal trip. Guys up here get kind of spoiled. They'll catch three or four or five fish in a day.
Later on the Allegheny Front, steelhead beef up the winter economy of Lake Erie. Stay tuned.
I got a fish.
We just heard what the head of the president's EPA transition thinks about environmental protection and climate science. He even coined the phrase climate industrial complex. Now environmentalists, climate scientists, and others are steeling themselves for a long, hard fight. State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick reports.
About 200 people gathered on a warm Sunday afternoon recently at a farm in southern Lancaster County. Together, they recited an oath.
We pledge to put our bodies between the land we love and those seeking to destroy it. Together, we stand with the land. Yeah!
They're preparing to engage in nonviolent civil disobedience and setting up camps to try to block the pipeline company Williams from building a new natural gas transmission line. The activists ceremonially ripped up a federal report on the project and threw it into a large bonfire, accusing regulators of downplaying the environmental impacts.
This is for you, Williams. No matter where you go, we're going to be here.
Tim Spies is helping lead the effort. He's not happy about Trump's win, but doesn't think Democrat Hillary Clinton would have been much better. He believes the U.S. has basically become an oligarchy.
It didn't matter whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans. Corporate America is what's calling the shots. You can color it a little different. You color it red, color it blue, it doesn't matter.
Yet Spies is pleased to see so many like-minded people fired up. They've built two encampments and plan to occupy the area when the pipeline construction begins. He says he believes Trump's polarizing rhetoric has propelled many people to get off the couch.
I've often used the analogy, it's like an alcoholic. He doesn't get better until he hits his bottom. And I think Trump's going to help us hit our bottom.
Indeed, Trump's rise to power is the worst-case scenario for the Earth's increasingly warming climate. That's according to Michael Mann, a distinguished professor of atmospheric science at Penn State University. Mann, who served as an advisor to Clinton, says if Trump truly wants to make America great, he should stop promoting fossil fuel interests and embrace the inevitable, a clean energy future.
That's where the world is headed. We simply have to decide whether we're going to get on that train now and be part of the solution, or we're going to be left out of the greatest economic revolution of this century.
Trump has called climate change a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese. He also appointed the former Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt, who's sued the EPA to block its efforts to address climate change, to head that agency. And the president's new America First energy plan makes no mention of renewable energy or climate change. But Mann has seen this movie before. Over the years, he's been one of the most vocal advocates for climate action within the scientific community, which has repeatedly put him in the crosshairs of an extremely contentious debate.
It's, amounted to getting death threats, receiving all sorts of nasty emails and letters. There have been actionable threats to members of my family. I had an envelope with a white powder that was sent to me here in my office at Penn State.
Mann says he'll just keep doing what he's been doing, writing books, giving talks, and speaking out. He says Trump's win has energized him because it's more important than ever that citizens understand science, even if politicians don't.
Even while they continue to deny there's a problem, ordinary Americans are seeing that something's happening. They understand that there is a problem, and I think that ultimately is going to win the day. It's going to force the hand of our policymakers, but make no question, we have to hold them accountable.
Meanwhile, two of Pennsylvania's leading environmental groups recently announced they're forming a new strategic alliance. It's in response to what they call an unprecedented anti-environmental political climate at the federal and state levels. Larry Schweiger heads the group Penn Future, which is partnering with the Conservation Voters of PA to share policy, advocacy, and legal resources.
The time couldn't be better because clearly the environmental movement needs to have a stronger hand in the outcome of elections and needs to give voice to the issues that are at stake.
Conservation Voters of PA Executive Director Josh McNeil says the groups hope to increase fundraising and reach out to more voters.
There's two things that win in politics. There's money and there's people. We're never going to have more money than Exxon, but we certainly already have a lot more people.
McNeil says the environmental fights at the state and federal levels are gearing up to be massive as groups work to protect decades of policies promoting clean air, water, and renewable energy. Marie Cusick, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Among the first acts of the new Congress was to undo one of the Obama administration's final actions, a regulation called the Stream Protection Rule. The rule would have made it harder for mining companies to pollute thousands of miles of streams. But the coal industry said the rule would have jeopardized their industry, and its allies in Congress agreed. The Allegheny Friends' Reed Frazier reports the rule could have had big impacts on coal mining in Pennsylvania.
Up a trail in Greene County, Veronica Koptis walks a path she's taken many times before.
It's really pristine. It's really relaxing. It's a beautiful place. It's even more gorgeous in the summer. I promise it's more green.
We're in Ryerson Station State Park, a few miles from the West Virginia border.
So right now we're above the 2L, 1L section of the mine.
That mine is CONSOL Energy's Bailey Complex, the largest producing underground coal mine in North America. CONSOL had planned to mine beneath Kent Run, the stream that runs through the park here. But Koptis and her group, the Center for Coalfield Justice, have helped stop that plan. The group, along with the Sierra Club, appealed CONSOL's mining permit here. A state environmental hearing board judge sided with the environmentalists, and CONSOL announced 200 miners would be temporarily laid off because it can't mine beneath Kent Run. At issue is subsidence caused by mining, which could cause cracks in the stream bed. When this happens, water can run into these cracks and dry up the stream. Between 2008 and 2013, 39 miles of streams in Pennsylvania suffered subsidence effects, according to a state tally. Koptis said she doesn't want it to happen here in Kent Run.
We are trying to prevent any significant subsidence damage, so cracking in the stream bank. We're worried about loss of springs that are feeding the stream water.
CONSOL and the State Department of Environmental Protection argued that the company would be able to fix the stream bed by pouring cement in any cracks opened up, or if that didn't work, rebuilding the stream entirely. Koptis and other environmentalists were hoping they'd soon get help from the federal government on issues like this. The Department of Interior finalized the stream protection rule in December in one of the Obama administration's final acts, but using a law called the Congressional Review Act, the new Congress quickly voted to take the new rule back. The stream protection rule would have tightened requirements for mining companies through more rigorous permitting, water monitoring, and stream restoration requirements, says Aaron Savage of the environmental group Appalachian Voices.
In layman's terms, basically they would need to assure the regulatory agency that they're not going to ruin water quality downstream.
The rule was initially designed to address problems with mountaintop removal, a type of mining common in central Appalachia, which has buried over 1,200 miles of rivers and streams.
It was a moderate rule. It wasn't some sort of drastic tree hugger rule. It was updating an existing rule based on current science.
But the mining industry hated the rule, and the Republican-controlled Congress wasted little time dispatching it. Rachel Gleason of the Pennsylvania Coal Alliance said the rule was overly broad and could have been used to regulate underground mining, like the kind commonly done in Pennsylvania.
They expanded it to areas that it should not be expanded to. It's a one-size-fits-all approach for the entire nation that does not work.
Gleason said her group was worried that in Pennsylvania, the stream protection rule would have restricted the ability of coal companies to mine beneath streams, and that would have made it virtually impossible for them to make money mining coal in Pennsylvania.
Given the hydrology and the makeup of Pennsylvania and the peaks and the valleys and the hills, it would be very difficult to do.
A spokesman for CONSOL Energy in an email called the stream protection rule, quote, an ill-conceived concept, and said the ideology behind it was rejected by voters in November. The Center for Coalfield Justice's case against CONSOL will be headed to a state appeals court. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
During the winter, many Americans who live along the Great Lakes head indoors. Who could blame them? But another season is underway, and it brings an economic bump to an area known as Steelhead Alley. Great Lakes Today's Elizabeth Miller has more.
It's 6 a.m. when trucks and SUVs begin pulling into an empty parking lot in Girard, Pennsylvania, a town outside of Erie with about 3,000 people. They bear license plates from Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Delaware. The group has come for steelhead, also known as rainbow trout. They get ready to wade through the waters of Elk Creek, and Patrick Robinson of Steelhead Alley Outfitters plans the day's strategy.
If we go around this corner to the right, it goes 150, 200 yards and then makes a bend back to the left.
Steelhead Alley is a strip of rivers and tributaries along Lake Erie. It spans Ohio, Pennsylvania, and New York. Each state stocks the non-native fish in 14 creeks and rivers to promote recreational fishing. Steelhead spend the summer in the lake before traveling back to cooler waters in the spring and fall to spawn.
When you think about that fish and how far they travel to get there, and you get the opportunity to catch that fish, it's really a special thing.
Robinson, part-time fishing guide and full-time preacher, started leading trips in 2007. He says most customers are from out of town, even out of state. Today's trip includes Tim O'Neill of Delaware.
Where I live in Delaware, we're very fortunate. We can fish 12 months out of the year, and we do fish 12 months out of the year. And we have a variety of freshwater fish, trout, smallmouth. The one fish that we don't have are steelhead. We have to drive to find steelhead.
O'Neill and his group are on a three-day excursion. They include a couple of friends from Dayton, Ohio, a father and son celebrating a birthday, and a group coordinated by O'Neill, who's in the fly fishing business himself.
It's just cool to catch really big, strong, angry fish in a little waterway like this.
Robinson says his business hosts a couple of hundred groups during the late fall and winter. The season itself is pretty unpredictable. It usually starts in October, but it could end any time from December to April, depending when the rivers freeze up. Robinson says the Great Lakes region is better to fish because he can guarantee a catch for his clients, even compared to the places where steelhead is native.
You go to the Pacific Northwest, and if you catch a few fish, like three fish in a week, it's been a phenomenal trip. Guys up here get kind of spoiled. You know, they'll catch three or four or five fish in a day.
Now, most of the research looking at the economic impact of Steelhead Alley is at least 10 years old. And it's based on survey responses from anglers, asking how much they spend and how much they traveled. But that research presents staggering numbers. By stocking steelhead, millions of dollars are coming back to each state. And it's not just going to guide services like Steelhead Alley Outfitters or fishing retailers like Orvis. Here's Orvis Regional Manager Park Burson.
Outside of just us, it impacts, you know, the hotel and restaurant industry and you know, everything from that to gas stations along the river and lunch shops.
Ohio and Pennsylvania sell thousands of non-resident fishing licenses between October and November, and they still sell hundreds in December and January. It's a welcome boost for the small towns like Girard, where gas stations and restaurants prepare to serve a few extra customers, all aiming to land a steelhead. Here's Robinson.
Once you've hooked the fish, doesn't mean you're necessarily going to land it because they're so strong. So when you hook that, it's literally like, it's hard to even describe. It's just the raw power that you have on the end of your line. It just, that's the moment everybody waits for.
I got a fish.
That's the first one of the day.
For Great Lakes Today, I'm Elizabeth Miller.
Great Lakes Today is a collaboration of WBFO in Buffalo, IdeaStream Cleveland, and WXXI in Rochester. This is the Allegheny Front. Thanks for listening to this week's show. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsoppel.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments, the Pittsburgh Foundation, the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds, the Laurel Foundation, the Catherine Mavis McKenna Foundation, PNC Charitable Trusts, and the Benedum Foundation. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports our coverage of energy and conservation. State Impact Pennsylvania is a collaboration between public radio stations WITF in Harrisburg and WHYY in Philadelphia, covering the Commonwealth's energy economy.